How's it, everyone? This is Nate. I get to welcome you to the show and tell you about our sponsor for today's podcast. Our sponsor today is Oakley Standard Issue, which is a division of Oakley for serving those that serve government, military, law enforcement, firefighters, and EMS, the whole lot. Qualified members get exclusive access to new products, service-related discounts, that's the big one, but still a whole lot more. Products they're already known for are their eyewear. Ballistic rated and industrial certified, it's perfect for on the job. Footwear that meets uniform regulations while on duty. Some of my favorite boots I've ever had, I picked up when I was in Fort Bliss, Texas, and did lots of ruck marches there. Awesome, awesome boots. Accessories like gloves, my favorite gloves have been Oakley gloves, backpacks as well. They've also got some newly released off-duty styles and collections that are worth heading on over to check out. So to do that, head to oakleysi.com where you can register and then take advantage of our discount code, which is fieldcraft15 at checkout. That way you can receive an additional 15% off your first order. Again, that's oakleysi, Sierra India, for all you professionals, .com. And head on over to check that out and claim this discount.
Hey guys, it's Mike Hernandez, your resident mobility director at Fieldcraft Survival. I have a PSA for you today, and that is you need to get outside and go camping more. You got to reap the benefits. Get the fam, get the kids, get the dog, pack some food, get your vehicle together, and go get long exposure to the sun with some vitamin D, fresh air, and then like that perfect middle of nowhere sleep. You know what I'm talking about. Well, some people are like, well, I would like to do that, but I don't have the ability to do that at night because I'm afraid of the dark. Well, if that's you, I have a solution for you too. KC Highlights has partnered with us, and they've given us a coupon code for a discount on select items, and that code is Fieldcraft. Good for anybody in the tribe. Use it, get on their website, set up your vehicle so you don't have an excuse, and go camp more. KC Highlights has a slogan, it's adventure further. And you got to be set up for the night if that's what you plan. Check them out, guys.
This podcast is brought to you by the good folks over at Hoist. Hoist has been helping us out here at Fieldcraft for a few years now. And a lot of our students have reaped the benefits of having a great relationship with Hoist, where we provide Hoist drinks at our classes. Hoist is utilized not only by our students, but by a wide range of people in the great outdoors, law enforcement, professional sports teams, and so forth. And it's pretty damn good stuff. There are some really interesting flavors that they have. I'm a big fan of the Mango Hoist myself. Guys, if you go over to www.drinkhoist.com, you can use the code FIELDCRAFT10 and get yourself 10% off of your order. Now, I would be lying to you if I were saying that that's the only place that you can find Hoist. Many times you just go to the grocery store and you'll find it in the sports drink aisle. And, you know, I've seen it there for, you know, a great, great price, great offer. And I've stocked up when I can. So, or when I could have. So please go over to www.drinkhoist.com. Use the coupon code FIELDCRAFT10. You'll get 10% off your order. Find out why all of our students and a bunch of our folks here at the company like Hoist and continue to drink it on a regular basis. So one more time, www.drinkhoist.com. Use a code FIELDCRAFT10. You'll get 10% off of your order.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast. I am your mobility host for today, Mikey, or Mike Hernandez. And I have a special guest with me that I'm actually super excited to announce that mobility is expanding in Kyle Cooper, who is no new face. I mean, you've been with us on a couple of
a few things.
Yeah, and he's been, you know, working pretty hard with us, and we have some cool things coming out that we'll outline. But I mean, we're actually in Arizona this time. This is my garage where we do a lot of the projects and behind the scenes stuff here in Arizona. I think some people don't realize that.
No, this is like mobility HQ
number. Right. And Kyle traveled all this way to one, bring you this podcast, but also we have a list of things that we're going to do, right?
Yeah, lots of stuff this weekend. And we've got about four full days of just like a ton of content, as much as we can squeeze in. Pretty excited about it.
Absolutely. So before we get started, let me open this. I lose my voice a lot. I don't know if you struggle with that.
I do too. And I've been sick lately too. So it's getting, I've got this like sexy phlegm going right now.
Word. Same. But yeah, to kick off this podcast, I want to talk obviously a lot about you to kind of give more of a background and kind of where you started, but also where you're at and when we're where we're going essentially, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So why don't you start out with, I think this is one of my favorite things that you do, and that is moto, obviously. We're in the garage rolling motorcycles, but your YouTube channel also, kind of how that all started.
So real quick backstory, ex-military, ex-law enforcement, and I got into motorcycle, off-road motorcycle riding a little bit when I was a kid. You know, as a kid, you always want a dirt bike because it's just like the thing. You wanted like a red dirt bike.
Especially the time we grew up in.
Right, right back in the like 80s, right? Yeah, yeah. So I was never fortunate enough as a kid to be able to have the money to be able to afford a motorcycle. Like I had some friends that always had one, and like the little bit I could go and ride at their place, I got my feet wet a little bit, but really got into sports after that and really wasn't into motorcycles. My parents were like, okay, listen, you're going to hurt yourself. Stay away. Stay away from motorcycles and just focus on sports. With the funny thing about that is like so many injuries in sports.
Pro football, yeah.
Pro football. I've had 8 knee surgeries, you know.
Oh.
So, but moving forward, after joining the military and coming home from Iraq after a long deployment, getting hurt overseas, and just kind of dealing with a lot of stuff mentally, I was looking for something to kind of just go out, get away, you know, kind of go out in the woods. And I've always been to overlanding, into Jeeps and that kind of stuff. But the real reason, and this kind of sounds cliche because everybody uses this excuse, but the show Long Way Around, the mini series Long Way Around came out, and I just had this urge to travel.
Bro,
it wasn't like I wanted to go around the world. Yeah. I just wanted to go and living in, at the time I was living in Oregon, and I was 5-10 minutes from National Forest, you know, so I could go, wouldn't have to go very far to get lost.
Dude, and let's normalize those awesome pieces of content, because I'm the same way. I mean, we're just talking about Harleys, right?
Right.
And I was like, you really want to know what kind of got me into this recently? And Jason Momoa's piece with the Pan America. Yeah. And it sounds kind of cliche because it's, you know, it's cinematic and it's all that, you know, they got to start. But dude, that stuff.
I mean, it's marketing. It's marketing. They did a good job, right? I mean, it's. I don't care what background you have. If you can't watch that and at least get a little something out of it, you know, it's pretty awesome. So
100%.
Anyway, so I had a street bike at the time. Funny thing is I was back at school, going to college, after my deployment, using the GI Bill, all that stuff. And, I bought at a garage sale, this Honda CM185. Google that real quick, because
what year was it?
It was a 1978.
Oh damn.
Yeah. It is your typical late 70s motorcycle. Yeah. It looked like something you would see overseas.
Okay.
But 185 cc's.
That's awesome.
It would maybe do 55 with me on it, and a backpack full of books. And no joke, man, I got this from a garage sale for $200. Guy says it doesn't run. Get it back home, clean the carburetor out, boom, kickstarter starts right up.
Wow.
I'm like, so this is my commuter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So is that a 2-stroke?
No.
Oh, 4-stroke.
It's 4-stroke. It's okay. A little, I mean, I can literally hear it in my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
The way it runs. Just like no compression, like no power. But dude, it was my first, I wouldn't even call it an adult motorcycle, because it's kind of makes me feel like I'm just a, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
As an adult, it was my first like motorcycle.
Yeah. Well, you're a legal adult.
Yeah. And I rode that thing. I mean, like as a kid, I was in, like I said, ATVs, all that kind of stuff, but I can take this thing on the road. I mean, this is like, I can travel on this thing. No one wants to travel on a CM. But so I'm taking it back and forth to school. Really kind of starting to like this motorcycle thing. So then I get a crotch rocket, like a lot of people kind of start off with street bikes wise. And I found out real quick, not the thing for me. And
really?
It was actually, and it wasn't an official crotch rocket. It was a Honda VFR 800s that they call it, a sport touring bike, but dude, it's an 800 cc freaking crotch rocket.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have that bike for several years, do some touring on it and stuff, and then one day I'm on the coast, Oregon coast, summer day, riding down the coast, beautiful day on Highway 101, pull into this rest area. This is again just after watching A Long Way Around.
Yeah.
And this older guy, white hair, big white beard, pulls into the rest area, and he's on a Suzuki V-Strom.
Oh, okay.
And that upright position,
hard bags, crash bars, skid plate, and not knowing any better. This is an adventure bike to me. Like in reality, it's not, but any bike technically can be an adventure bike. You can ride any bike off road if you're crazy enough.
100%.
There's guys who go gold wings off road. More power to them. So anyway, so I can have a conversation with this guy, and he said, "Hey, nice bike." And I'm like, yours is awesome. You know, it's got all the things I want. I just saw this movie. He's like, "Oh yeah, I saw it too. We're talking about it." And he's like, "Man, this is the bike for you. Do you want to trade?"
And what?
And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, "No, man.
Just a horse trade straight across?"
Yeah.
What?
He goes, "Do you have the title for your bike?" I said, "I sure do." He goes, "Well, I've always wanted a VFR 800.
Get out of here.
He had an older VFR when they first came out. They were turbocharged years ago. And he goes, "Meet me tomorrow at my house. Here's my address."
Bro, can we be like those old guys when we're older? Like, that's so rad, dude.
It gets better. So I'm like thinking that this guy's crazy. No way. He gives me his phone number, gives me his address. I get all the way home, get my title, and I call him up, and I'm like, "Hey, you're serious about this?" He's like, "Yeah, let's," like 10:30 in the morning. Granted, it's a 3.5 hour ride for me to get back to where I just came from. I'm like, "Sweet, I'll leave at 7. We'll be there."
Yeah.
Freaking next morning, get in coast, bomb down to his house again. He opens his garage, and this man has like 35 motorcycles.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So I definitely want to be like this.
Yes. Yes. And then it kind of dawns on me, like, this is what this guy does.
Yeah.
He collects and trades and swaps and he retired. And then, you know, he was probably early 70s.
Yeah. Potentially,
you know,
like a lifetime of doing this too.
Yeah. 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 And I see like a Goldwing back there. I see a BMW R1100, like all these like cool classic motorcycles. And dude, we traded up right there, and I rode that thing home. And I get home, and I'm thinking, okay.
How old were you?
I was like 23, 24, somewhere in there at the time. I get it home, and I'm like, okay, I've got the bike.
Yeah.
And again, this is not like a long travel suspension motorcycle, but I didn't care. We're taking it all over the place. And that's what I did, man. I turned it into my Jeep on two wheels and went. I toured all of Oregon off-road. Oregon has an official BDR now, but it used to have, years ago, like 6 or 7 different routes that were the original BDR routes. And took it, okay. So when I got the bike, it had 27,000 miles on it. Mm. I sold it at 101,000 miles.
No kidding.
And I only had that bike for like 6 years.
Dang, bro. So that was, wow.
I rode it to work. I rode it to school. I rode it. I mean, literally, if I didn't have my wife and kids with me, that bike was, that's what I was riding. In the rain, in the snow, did not care.
Dude, talk about influencing somebody, you know?
Well, it's nuts. That show, and again, if you've never seen it, it's on YouTube. It's on Netflix.
Let's talk about it. I mean, it's a series, right? How many are there now?
I think so there's 2 official movies, I believe, Long Way Round and Long Way Down.
And with Ewan McGregor.
And Charlie Borman.
Right.
And they literally, like, they take 2 BMW motorcycles and they ride them around the world the long way. Like, they start in England, I believe, and then go through Russia, and they end up having to, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
They go and they ship the bike from Russia to Alaska, down and around, and all the way to New York City.
And then that leads to like other series where they do the electric Harley at the
Actually the newest one. There is 3 of them. They rode the electric Harley from with Rivian.
Yes.
From Argentina up, which was crazy too, because
100%.
Rivian had to end up having to put charging stations the whole way up for it. Which is, can't even imagine the money. What they had their issues, you know.
100%.
They didn't go as well as they thought.
No, and you know what I love about it is it totally legitimized Ewan to me as a person.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I just had this preconceived notion of an actor and, oh, you know, I guess the struggling actor thing is a part of it. And then they're just like, boom, millionaires. But to see him having that level of success and still like embracing this challenge in a way that most of us can't, right?
Yeah. He definitely seems like he's the kind of guy who, he definitely has a passion for motorcycles as well.
I mean, and the real deal. And I guess my point. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't matter what it is. Mm-hmm. He rides anything from, you know, bobbers to dirt bikes, whatever, you know, And Charlie's the same way. Charlie's a huge advocate for motorcycles.
Have you seen his car accident or his wrecks?
Yeah.
Oh.
I guess that's some brutal accidents.
Brutal accidents, man. So that's a long way around. And then for those of you guys who are listening and watching, VDR is the Backcountry Discovery.
Yeah, Backcountry Discovery Route. So the Backcountry Discovery Route is a 501c3 nonprofit. They basically create routes through the most rural parts of states.
Yeah.
And they also do a pretty good job of bringing income to these almost extinct ghost towns.
100%. And dude, that's so cool from an American standpoint.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's this thing that happens with our interstates that they can either give birth or just kill certain businesses. Yeah. And these BDRs are great because they will and are intended to, you know, reinvigorate these places that may have suffered.
And it's crazy. Even I saw it firsthand. Last year we did the Wyoming one, which was, it was epic. I mean, I think of Wyoming as windy and just flat and it's not.
I just did a whitetail hunt out there. 100%. That's all it was. Yeah.
And one of the first places we stop at, you know, we get a restaurant, getting ready to day one, getting ready to kick off this thing the next day. So let's get a hotel tonight. Tomorrow we'll camp. And day one, we're at this restaurant with this at the hotel, and this lady, you know, she talks about how she's owned that hotel for 10 or 15 years. And, you know, up until that point, she thought that she was gonna have to close down.
No kidding.
And then that year alone, in that first few weeks of summer, they had like already made their whole year's worth of sales what they had the year before.
Because of the BDR. Wow, that's
so
cool.
It's super cool.
Yeah.
That you get to be able to bring, you know, income to these towns that were, again, basically gonna disappear.
Well, and for those of you guys who know me, I'm a little hippie in that sense where I do like these, you know, these community outreach things, or there's any ways that, you know, we can do better or use our influence or whatever that looks like. And when you think about it, what a concept. Go run this badass trail.
Yeah.
That's already mapped out for you. It has all these places. And then you do good at the same time. That's pretty cool.
What I like about the BDRs is you don't have to put a whole lot of thought into them. You know, they've done a ton of research on the route. You can get the tracks and the maps, or you can get the tracks for free. You can buy the maps if you choose. You don't have to have the paper map. I personally like to have the paper map just because it's a nice waterproof map.
Tangible.
It's tangible. Yeah. It's no touch. And it's a good backup plan, right? Sure. But, you know, everything's done. So you don't have to put a whole lot of thought.
Yeah.
The most thought you have is, do you want to eat here? Even the gas stops are
all mapped out.
For the most part, about every 100 miles, which is what most motorcycles are pretty capable of doing.
Yeah.
I mean, even you can take your 50 or your 500 over there.
Yeah.
It'd be close, but you can probably get about 100 miles if you ride, you know, pretty gentle on it. So they make it to where every 100, 125 miles you can get fuel. And then most of those fuel stops have either food there as well, or place to get food as you can have at camp. So, again, you don't have to put a whole lot of thought into it, which is great for the newer rider because it's accessible. It makes it really, really accessible. And, you know, a lot of people kind of, when it comes to trips like that, they almost get stressed out and takes away some of the fun of it when you have to really kind of worry about it so much. Whereas
100%.
Whereas the BDRs, I mean, it's almost like it's a self-guided tour without it.
All the information is there for you to make good shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're right. Cause even when we teach trip planning and stuff, that's one of the questions I get all the time is, why did you pick this area? And a lot of times it's because, well, it's cause I could find the most information about it. Like I'm not, and this is, I think, a good distinction about the kind of riding that you and I like to do. I'm not out here trying to do like motocross jumps and stuff. And there's a time and place for that. Don't get me wrong, bro. I feel like I'm too old for that. Like I'm trying to get out there and enjoy the scenery and come back in one piece.
Right. So, and you know, that's kind of building on my intro story, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what draw me to it so much is that, and being in law enforcement, you're around the worst people all the time. So when I have the ability to go out with a couple of like-minded friends,
it's like therapy,
and then I call it throttle therapy or dirt therapy, you know, kind of those two terms I use a lot. And to be able to go out, be self-sufficient, like you have your food, you've got the water you need or the ability to filter water, you've got your shelter, all the things you need to then not see anybody except maybe a wave when you pass somebody on the trail.
True.
I mean, there's been times on certain routes where, I mean, dude, we didn't see anybody for 3 or 4 days.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
Nothing against people.
No.
Just sometimes it's just cool to hang out with your buddies
and
enjoy what God gave you.
100%. And you reconnect with nature. I mean, you regroup. There's so many therapeutic things that happen on a motorcycle that I probably need to do it its own episode, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about you a little more. So you got your horse traded bike, which is phenomenal.
Yep.
Where do we go from here in your story?
So I basically kind of trade up as we go, right? Mm-hmm. So I go from the V-Strom after, you know, several years of having that to a little bit more capable off-road style bike. I went to a KTM 640 Adventure, which I rode on one trip and I got rid of it.
Really?
Dude, it's a cool bike. It's a dirt bike with an 8-gallon tank, but anything over 60 miles an hour
just
vibrated so bad.
Oh, yeah.
So I went from there to a Honda Africa Twin. And I was that kind of kicked off my true adventure bike self, I guess, because I was one of the first people in the Northwest to own one. My serial number for that bike was like 126 or 127.
Oh, really?
I can't remember exactly, but yeah, low 120s or low 100s. I mean, and
that's not the one I saw, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that bike? Oh, okay.
2016. Yeah. I feel like I had another bike between there somewhere, but I can't remember.
Yeah.
At one time, I did have a really old KLR that I never actually did anything with and ended up buying it, selling it. But KLR is another excellent bike. It's really overlooked. People sometimes kind of shame that bike. But, dude, that bike is if around the world bike. Mm. That bike's a really good bike.
Yeah.
So take the Africa Twin. And, again, kind of just to keep me busy, I started doing some YouTube videos.
Oh, nice.
I'd buy something for the bike because it was being brand new, no content out there on it.
Yep.
And I had been a kind of a consumer of YouTube, but never thought I'm going to start doing YouTube to make money or so people can see. And it still isn't about that, right?
Yeah.
I do it. My goal for YouTube is to help people.
Gotcha.
So again, I get the Africa Twin and crash bars. I went to put a set of crash bars on. There's no videos on how to put crash bars on. Yes, they give you instructions, but if you're like me, you like to watch somebody else do it, see their mistakes, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So
he wants to read the instructions.
Yeah. So I read instructions, right? But I'm just saying, I like to see you because sometimes, you know,
just wing it, bro.
Sometimes,
let's be honest,
right? Sometimes instructions tell you one way, but then there's a better way to do it.
Yeah.
Or somebody says, hey, you know, if this is this, then do this. But, so I made a video on it and most people, when they start doing YouTube, you know how this goes.
Yeah,
so like you post a YouTube video and you're like, dude, it's been posted for like 3 weeks and I've got like 5 people seen it.
Yeah.
I posted my first video and it got like 2,000 views in like a week.
Nice.
I was like, what is going on? This is easy, you know? And then I posted another video on how to do this for the Africa Twin and another video. And then it kind of clicked. Okay, no one has this bike yet. I'm one of the first people. People are starting to buy it. And then I started getting people calling me saying, hey, you have one of these bikes, you want to put my parts on it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
100%.
You know, what's the catch? Nothing. We'll send you some parts.
Yeah.
Well, okay, let's do that. So I started, you know, R&Ding parks for certain companies.
That's cool, man.
Trying things out. And then it just kind of like, it clicked. Like, this is a cool hobby. It's a fun hobby. I can go out and do exactly what I love to do. And now I can start like, you know, enjoying it without having to spend a bunch of money because this can be an expensive sport.
Yeah.
So so just one thing led to another and here we are, 2016 is my first video and 2015, the end of 2015 and here we are in 2023 and we're still going strong. The growth isn't amazing. It's not huge. There's definitely bigger channels than mine out there, but that's not what I do it for. I do
it because
like I said, I like to help people and, it's very organic.
The people,
my subscribers that are on YouTube are awesome.
Yeah.
They follow me for the right reasons. And if they don't follow me, then that's fine too.
100%.
There's other channels out there.
What's the name of your YouTube channel?
Backcountry ADV Moto.
Backcountry.
Yeah.
That's right. No, it's actually one of the things that, you know, drew me to you, but like you said, super organic. You get all those great landscape, shots and, you know, the views of the bike. But what it does for me is since I do spend some time here in the garage on projects, I can easily put it on and kind of be there on that trip while I'm trying to get stuff done. And I use YouTube a lot like that, bro.
You know, what's funny. You're not alone in that because I've had several people who've reached out and say, dude, you got me through my work day.
Like,
I hate sitting in my cubicle cranking out whatever reports or whatever.
But
I can have that in the background. And then I can know what I'm looking forward to in the spring or whatever. And I even had one guy, well, I'll even plug it, A to Z Composites. Mm-hmm. They make carbon fiber parts. They started off making carbon fiber parts for Kawasaki, and then they made some for DOD. And now they make motorcycle parts as kind of a side gig. But he reached out to me one day and was like, hey, I just want you to know, all of my employees in my shop know who you are because we have a 72-inch screen TV.
Oh, I just put it there.
And they watch, everybody in the shop watches. And I'm like, dude, that blows me away.
It's no joke though, dude.
So like inspiring to 100%. Like have people who want to watch the things that you put out when, you know, sometimes you don't know how things are going to land with people when you start putting it out to the world and the internet, you know?
Oh, bro, that's just so true. Oh my God. I mean, it's one thing to have like a goal, like this is what I'm trying to communicate. I'm trying to, you know, get people to go outside, inspire them, build community, whatever. And some people just gets lost and all they see is the part that you got for free from somebody. And it's only, I understand completely with what we've been
doing. And again, I'm not a full-time YouTuber. I don't do this as my number one income. Yeah. And we're fortunate enough to have other businesses that we run. And this is just a really fun side gig that I get a lot of pleasure doing. And again, a lot of the people that say how much I helped him with even just little stuff, you know, hey, I didn't even know how to change my oil. And
it's true.
I was, you saved me $100 from having to take it to the dealer.
Bro,
you
know? And that's such a good point because that's a lot of what we see at Phil Kraus Survival in our courses and in like our app and the stuff we're putting together is, you know, unless you went to school specifically for this, or maybe grew up on a farm is an example that I use, you know, and not everybody grew up on a farm, you know, not everybody had a dad growing up, you know, or a grandpa to show them this stuff. So there's no shame in whatever age you are in saying, well, what's on YouTube? I mean, it's what, the number two search engine in the world only to Google or something?
Yeah.
I don't know what the exact.
They're owned by Google. So it's literally like
number
two. So I think YouTube has changed the world when it comes to how do I do something, right? Because growing up, I was fortunate enough. My dad he wasn't a car mechanic, but he was a mechanic for big giant compressors and stuff. And he always told me, if it goes round and round or up and down, I can fix it.
That's so good.
And I learned a lot just from like being by osmosis, basically just being there, holding the light, you know? And I enjoy it. I've always, like, again, with Overland Rigs and Jeeps, I always did my own stuff. I've always changed my own oil, that type of thing. And it just comes second nature to me. I mean, my hands right now
are all jacked and
proud because I mean, I just enjoy it. And, you know, for me to be able to do that and then kind of like be that person for somebody else through a screen, that's cool.
That's fun, man.
Yeah.
And that's what an excellent way to spend your time. You know, I mean, there are way worse things that you can be doing rather than that.
Right.
But so we got the YouTube channel. We met through Glover.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys haven't seen it yet too, we've done, it was a documentary. What do we call that one? It's on the Phil Kraus Survival YouTube channel too. I think it was like Moto Bug Out or something was the title, and where we were in Montana with Clay Croft and everybody. Remember that?
Yeah.
We featured the 501c3 that you were doing some veteran work for.
Veterans Back 40.
Yeah. And then we did that and it kind of got the ball rolling, which brings us to the end of 2023, which is this year. We kind of sat down. And it was a discussion between Glover and Rob and myself, and we were thinking of creative ways to expand on the very things that we do, right? And I don't know, me and you were kind of talking about this perception that people have of mobility or what it is, because they see, you know, these big mild to wild rigs, mine happens to be one of the wild ones, and we're trying to figure out, you know, how do we tap in to win that community aspect, but present it in a way that is going to do just exactly what you said, be informative, all these other things. And, you know, moto stuff is stuff that Glover has always done. And I'm fairly new, like over the last, 3 years?
Yeah.
Fairly new. And your name constantly came up in our conversation. And since that piece of content, honestly, we've been like, you know, how do we incorporate this and move? And then I'm super excited for this year, just so you guys are tracking on this. I kind of alluded to it in the beginning, but we have set out a content plan for the app and some YouTube stuff to do a couple BDRs, on those trips.
I mean, the possibilities are pretty much endless. At this point. Yeah.
Endless.
We have some really good ideas. We've been brainstorming for hours on what we should do. And then we want to make it accessible to anybody too.
Exactly.
Hence the reason we have this bike here.
This one, yeah. Well, let's talk about this one and then We have to talk about the Arizona BDR,
yes,
in depth, because essentially there was an accident, and the lessons learned from that are so valuable, and that's why
the super whole valuable.
But yeah, let's talk about this.
What's yeah, we'll just touch on this really quick because we'll have more content on this in the future. But
oh yeah, yeah.
So this is a Honda XR650L.
This is the one seen on Glover's YouTube channel.
Yes, he did. He did a quick thing on it as well. So this bike has been out since, I believe, 1993. The predecessor was the XR650R. Problem with that bike, it's a ripper, but
oh, really?
It's only kickstart, so it's not as accessible to everybody. But the XR650L, pretty much unchanged for, you know, however many years, 30 years. This is actually the 30 year anniversary. That's why it's white. This bike was always red.
Okay.
But the 30 year anniversary, again, unchanged. And it's funny because for the 30 year anniversary, you'd think they'd do something big to change it. They changed the paint scheme.
I was like, I don't think they can, right? Isn't it like grandfathered into some kind of emissions nonsense?
So Honda is one of the only still carbureted motorcycles. Yeah. Everybody else has gone fuel injection, which there's positives and negatives to both.
Yeah.
The cool part about this bike is you can take this bike literally around the world like Ewan McGregor did, and you can find parts for it everywhere.
So he rode this one then? And that?
No, he rode a BMW.
Oh, okay.
But I'm just saying, like,
you can do it.
But this bike, it looks like an ancient motorcycle.
With a gonzo nose on it?
With a gonzo nose. You can't really see it because the fender, but the big square headlight. But it was way ahead of its time. It's got air fork suspension, which was one of the first people to do it then. The suspension out of the box for such a basic motorcycle is excellent. Again, it's carbureted, so it's really easy to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Air cooled.
Simple.
So you don't have to worry about radiators or busting radiators. Just a very simple motorcycle. Lots of suspension travel. I think it's like 11 and a half or almost
12
inches. And then it has like the most ground clearance of all this style of motorcycle. There's only a couple other bikes similar to this that are still out there.
Yeah.
One would be the Suzuki DR650.
Mm-hmm.
That one's pretty popular too because it has a lower seat height. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit more accessible for some people.
Cult following.
Yeah. And then the KLR. But the newer KLR has fairings and everything else where it's kind of lost its... I don't know, just simplicity, I guess.
Yeah, it's OG.
Yeah.
How's it, everyone? Nate here with the show's sponsor for today. This episode is proudly sponsored by the U.S. Concealed Carry Association, a leader in responsible gun ownership and survival training. Fellow survival enthusiasts, we all know the key question in our minds. Are you truly prepared for whatever life throws at you? Are you as physically prepared as possible to shoot with precision under pressure? Are you mentally ready to deal with the adrenaline and extreme stress? Do you have a lawyer on retainer in case you need to defend you in court after using your gun in self-defense? If you answer no to any of those, it's okay. But it doesn't mean it will be okay. You need to be as prepared as possible to survive a gun owner in today's world. That means being ready for a mental, physical, and legal action of self-defense. That's why I've been a member for 3 years, because the USCCA, I have all the tools necessary to become a better equipped shooter and protector. Head to the uscca.com/FCS to start your membership risk-free today and get instant access to all the resources you need, as well as a free survival gift. Thanks, uscca.com/FCS.
So you have it now, or we have it now, because we are actually doing,
we're going to be doing a series on this as far as why we picked it as kind of a, we'll call it the ultimate bug out bike.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to do a build on it to make it a little bit more comfortable for longer rides, what you can do to carry some loadout on it, as well as ergonomics, change the lighting. We're going to put some better headlights on it.
Improve
a lot of things. Fuel tank for sure.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest beefs with this bike, is it only has like a 2 gallon maybe fuel tank.
Oh, okay.
So it doesn't get a lot of range, but we have a larger fuel tank for it. So it'll be a fun build, and then we'll take it out and we'll actually put it through some real world.
Yeah.
Overland testing. And,
perfect.
Yeah.
That's what I love. I mean, we were talking about this too, on how we communicate like mobility and the stuff we talk about. I mean, mobility in theory, right, starts from your everyday mobility stuff, which is the commute, you know, the stats from, I think it was Cooper Tires that I always quote, is something like 22 days out of the 30 days a month we spend on average, right?
Yeah.
In our vehicles. That's a lot of time. Let's just call that, you know, 3 weeks. And then you extrapolate that over the year. I mean, it's a lot of time that people just commute on the regular. So there is stuff to manage that. However, we're field craft survival, so we want to answer that and then go further and say, you know, if you do have to bug out, which things are pretty bad if you do, right? I mean, we talk about that all the time. How do you do that? Well, I'm glad you asked, how do we do that? Because the answer is you go camp, you know?
Exactly.
If you have an overland rig or something like this where we're hitting BDRs and you're able to sustain, then you are learning how to
you're practicing the craft all the time. And let's be honest, the motorcycle is not the best bug out rig, right? If you have a family, it's not the best, but it is a great secondary tool.
Absolutely.
That if you could load this in the back of your pickup and then go out to wherever you are going to bug out and then you use this as your...
Yep.
It's better on fuel.
Yep.
It's easier to manage traffic in a situation to where there was gridlock. You could buzz through cars.
Yeah. So I saw this news report about the Maui incident, and there was a restaurant owner. I forget his name. I was even thinking about doing kind of a report or some content on it. Because oftentimes we talk about, you know, bugging out or getting away from a situation or getting through traffic or traffic jams. What was interesting to me is since there was so much destruction in Maui, the only way he could get back to like look over his restaurants, he had several, or even his properties that were essentially gone. One of them was still standing and he had a dirt bike and he used the bike to get back in.
Yeah.
You know, that makes perfect sense.
I mean, imagine trying to drive even a compact car in that footprint versus, a single track of what a dirt bike can do.
And there was roadblocks and everything set up. I mean, I know when
you just go around. It's such a good, again, it's such a great tool.
Well, it's a world tool. That's what's so cool about it.
Yeah.
You know,
such a large amount of the population in the world, that's how they get around.
You know, for me, when I first started looking at it, it was immediately apparent that one, I needed to spend less money on this stuff, but two, that that motorcycles were the solution, because like this bike we're talking about, you know, anybody can, when you talk about like the minimum amount to get into overlanding or doing whatever, this is it.
For sure. I mean, this bike, brand new. And it's like $6,900. Yeah. And again, it hasn't changed since 1993. Mm-hmm. So if you're on a budget, go buy one that's 10 years old and go pay $3,000 for it.
So true.
And with that amount of money, don't get me wrong, the motorcycle is a small percentage of what you have to actually buy to get. If you want to be safe and have the gear and the camping gear and all the things that go along with it, just like anything else. So if you're
you can horse trade somebody. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that's like, I can't believe that.
You know what's funny about that whole deal is like, I think he actually got the better end of the
deal. Did he?
One, because that bike, it was the last year they made that bike, and I didn't know that they were
he's like,
it's the last year they made that motorcycle. And then,
stupid kid, I'm telling you.
I think I paid more than what he paid for that bike to begin with.
Interesting.
Whatever, man. Yeah. I got
good story.
Way more value out of that motorcycle than I would of the VFR.
Yeah. No, good. There's just so much we could talk about, but since this is more of like an introductory podcast, I'm going to say this because we're going to transition to our story.
Yeah.
If you haven't already subscribed or gone onto the Footcraft Survival app, the way that it's designed from a mobility standpoint, but even, you know, like Kevin Estella's stuff or Amber's, Nate's, everybody's, our sections are designed to be from the ground up. So you build your systems up. And that's what's so awesome is we're actually this week filming those pieces where, so you decided to get a motorcycle, or maybe these are some of the reasons why you should consider a motorcycle. And that's where we begin, right?
Yeah. And that's our plan. And what's cool, what I really enjoy about that is it's been such a long time since I've done any content like that, because it's, you know, I've been doing this for so long that I really am excited about kind of starting fresh again and kind of starting to teach kind of the things that I've learned over the years. And I'm pretty stoked about it.
So to transition, we were supposed to and had full intention on doing the Arizona BDR, correct?
Like a month ago today almost.
What was it?
Yeah, like the fourth through the, it was like really close.
When disaster struck.
Yeah.
So you were starting the BDR and I was waiting to rendezvous
to catch up
in the certain Arizona location that we were trying to figure out.
Yeah.
So what happened?
Okay. So let me just preface this real quick. So again, the BDRs they're a marathon versus a sprint, right?
Yes.
So the whole point of a BDR is to go from one point of the state across the state to another. Mm-hmm. And the whole satisfaction that most people get as they get to say, hey, I just traversed all this different terrain in places that most people don't, right?
Yeah.
Unless you have a four-wheel drive vehicle or whatnot. So whenever I ride with guys and I lead these types of rides, I say, hey, remember, this is what it's about. We're, you know, yes, we all are really, we all like to go fast. We all are like, we all like the adrenaline. But at the end of the day, we also want to make it to camp. And we also want to make it home.
100%.
So
we call it vehicle sympathy.
And
mobility, right?
Well, and it does work. Not only do you want to not hurt yourself, but if you break your motorcycle while you're out there,
which we're going to find out what happened.
We found out quick that I've had breakdowns before, not on myself, but with other guys. And we've always had to work around, but in this case, it was different. So going into it, me and a buddy, we drive, I live in North Idaho. So to get here, it's a 20-hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
So we left, we drove, traded off, drove straight through, went to St. George, Utah, kind of rendezvoused at a place that we knew one of our friends lives, and stayed at his place one night. And then the next morning we get up, unload the bikes, and we start heading towards the start of the BDR, which is on the Utah, Arizona border.
Yep. North.
Yep. On the northern border. Right. So, and we had some other friends who were also coming over from Las Vegas. So we met them and we took off.
Mm.
Well, had a full day ride. We didn't actually start the ride until about noon, because by the time they rode over from Vegas and everything. And let me just back up to, and part of this situation, the more I think about it, is when it comes to, you know, how prepared are you mentally for this traverse that you're about to do? And so we're kind of already starting off kind of tired, a little bit not with it. We just came out of a four-wheel vehicle for 20 hours, got very little sleep, packed some more stuff the night before, and then jumped on two wheels, which to ride a motorcycle, you need as much mental focus as possible, right? Especially when you're doing it off-road and in technical situations. So we get to the start, which technically wasn't even the start of the BDR. We kind of took a detour just to start because it was a lot of pavement to get to where we were
trying to recover.
Yeah.
The time.
Yeah. So we took a dirt road. One, it was going to be more fun than riding just slab and pavement for, you know, 70 something miles. So we took this dirt road. It actually turned out to be really fun, but also pretty technical.
Okay.
So I think that kind of smoked some people to begin with.
Okay.
We make it to the start of the route through this alternate route, and then we take off. We grab some supplies, and then like the next town, starting to get about 4 o'clock. Everything's been fairly easy. The only injury to, we'll get to this, but the only issue we had so far was one of the guys who was riding, the same guy who didn't finish the ride, took a bee to the eye.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, or it was some type of insect, right? Because it instantly swole up.
So was he wearing a full face mask, or how did that?
He had a full face mask, but he had just flipped it up.
Oh, dude.
To get some air in, because it was pretty warm. Yep. And normally he wears goggles. This guy is an avid rider.
Yeah.
I mean, very, very good rider.
Yeah.
And
that's just the timing.
Dude, it's just bad timing.
But I got hit one time right here.
But it also kind of goes to show, like, you know, all gear, like it's at GAT, AGAT, all gear, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're gonna flip your visor up, at least have sunglasses or something on to protect your eyes. Some guys wear goggles, some guys can't, whatever, you know, but eye protection is pretty important because obviously if you can't see, you can't ride. So he takes that puts us back about 20, 30 minutes, give him some Benadryl, not Benadryl, but an antihistamine, because we didn't want to give him Benadryl and make him tired. So it was a topical antihistamine, and then it goes down, we take off again. Get our supplies and all that, and then we're like, okay, guys, let's find camp. We're riding, and I am just cruising along. I'm looking over, watching these like gorgeous wild horses running through the desert, you know, or the sagebrush. And I'm like,
this is awesome. You're connected, bro. Dude, you're geeking out. Yeah.
And the road is a two-track road, and apparently there was one rock. I hit this rock.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's funny. Dude, it was violent.
Really?
I was going maybe 25 miles an hour, not very fast. My handlebars like went like this, you know.
Really?
Dude, I hit the ground, broke my mirror, took the handlebar to my thigh. I had such a huge bruise on my thigh, like barely missed my pad. And I'm like, well, it's time to find camp. Things are starting to kind of happen.
Yeah.
Well, we look on the map. Camp is about over here, you know, on the map. Let's just head there. It's starting to kind of be dusk because we, you know, it's that time of year.
The
sun starts to set around 5:30.
Yep.
We get about an hour a day light left and we're all there. I'm there to get content. You know, I really enjoy, you know, doing some cinematic stuff. And another guy that was with us also really enjoys doing that type of thing. He's actually a professional videographer.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And
for Harley, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we tell our buddy who can ride and can wheelie like nobody else. I mean, he can ride a wheelie for 5 miles, dude, just straight and going. Not the kind of riding you really should be doing on a BDR, but you know, guys being guys and people just wanting to have fun.
Mm.
This guy says, hey, the sunset is amazing. It'd be really cool if we get caught you doing a wheelie. He does a wheelie, shot turns out awesome. And then the guy says, I'm going to do one more. And we're like, no, don't, we're already ahead.
Yeah.
He doesn't hear us in the comms and he's cruising at like 60.
Oh next, my God.
Next thing you know, you just see this giant silt cloud and wow. he went over backwards. He hits this silt cloud, overcorrects, and then just, it's bad.
So he's riding and then bike on top of him?
Well, it happened so fast.
You couldn't tell, but
you couldn't tell, right?
He went back, okay.
So we're trying to talk to him through the comms and he's not answering.
Oh no.
Luckily, Alpine Star makes this airbag vest.
Oh, was he who's wearing that?
And somebody had just given him one as a gift like the day before. And sorry, I'm gonna go.
No, yeah, yeah.
So he's sitting upright, his bike kind of leaning against his bike. His bike had cartwheeled a few times. He had cartwheeled a few times. And the reason he wasn't responding to the comms was because it broke off. So I'm thinking when he's not responding that it's real bad. Dust clears. I'm trying to paint the picture here.
Yeah.
And he's taking his helmet off. So I'm like, okay.
Oh, he's alive.
He's alive. Right? Because dude, I mean, as law enforcement, being on the crash team, I've seen some horrific crashes. And that the first thing is in my mind is like, I'm going to have to tell this dude's wife.
Oh, no, you know? Man.
So luckily, he's taking his helmet off and he goes, "Aff, guys, sorry, I broke my leg." And I'm like, what? Stone cold calm.
Yeah.
I broke my fucking leg. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And we walk up and it's just a J.
Oh, ooh.
So
in his boots.
So yeah.
Oh dude,
it was good. You did a good job.
Yeah.
But when you crash at 65 miles an hour going over backwards, it's gonna, you know, something's.
Well, isn't he a big dude too, though?
He's a big dude. He's like, I don't know how big he is, but he's like 6'3".
Six something. Yeah.
Yeah. 225 pounds or something.
Yeah.
And then my thought is like, how are we getting this big bastard out of here?
Well, isn't his bike large too, right? Wasn't he riding?
He's riding a KTM 890 rally. So
okay, so that's not small.
You know, he's as big as your 27 here or whatever. So
that's like a 500-pound bike.
Yeah, especially with gear and everything else, you know. Oh, and it's puking fuel. So it's got a.
Oh, he ruptured something.
The tank is low on it.
Yeah.
And even though it's got protection, the violent crash like
how
that punctured the fuel tank. So he's leaning against the bike. No one knows it, but it's like bloop, bloop.
Oh.
And we had just filled up too. So just pouring like 8 gallons of gas on the ground.
That's scary.
So we slide the bike out of the way, get him propped up with some gear. And, you know, we luckily had cell service. We had one bar of service. Mm-hmm. For those of you who don't know, the BDR, again, goes through some real remote areas, but the northern section's all through the Navajo Reservation.
All res, yep.
So when you call 911, It went to Flagstaff. Flagstaff says, oh, you're on the reservation. Let me transfer the reservation.
We can't do anything.
They don't want to do anything.
Yep.
So 911 transferred me to the reservation. Well, lady at the reservation picks up and she's like, what's your emergency? And then I'm hearing kids screaming in the background. Bro. And being somebody who's dealt with dispatch and stuff for 10 years, I'm like, I'm starting to get a little bit frustrated, right? It's not life or death, you know, but we got a broken leg and we have we're not going to be able to get a vehicle in there. So she's can't figure out where we are. I'm calmly giving her coordinates. Yeah. I'm having to repeat them three.
So you're having major comms issues.
Three and four times. And then, dude, finally I hang up and I tell my buddy, I said, hey, I know you have an inReach.
Mm.
I said, if you don't know, if you're not familiar with inReach, inReach is made by Garmin. It's an SOS device where you can the new ones, you can text message through them. You can hit the SOS button.
Satellite,
it immediately calls the whole, everybody rallies to you.
Yeah.
You
know? What is it? I forget what system, how do you pronounce it? Iridium?
Iridium Network.
Iridium Network?
Yeah.
So I always get that wrong. I always say some stupid Star Wars.
But there is, so there's a basic plan that you can buy for that to where you can use the service, but it doesn't cover everything.
Yeah.
For an extra $25, I believe, unless it's gone up, it covers you for $100,000 of search and rescue coverage.
Okay.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
If you have an inReach and you don't have that insurance, buy it.
Because it's gonna
save your ass. Mm-hmm. So I asked him, I was like, hey, do you have that? He goes, yeah, I think so. And you can pull it up on the device and shows if you do or not. And he's like, yeah, I do. I was like, do you push that effing button?
Yep.
He pushed that button and within 30 seconds, got a message on his inReach and a phone call. What's your emergency? I have a broken leg. Probably can't get an ambulance in here. It's too rocky. Yeah. He's like, all right. Then within 40 minutes or less, bird was landing. So we set up a landing zone for the bird and everything, which again, I'm not sure if you ever covered anything like that on Fieldcraft at all. It's not super technical. Most of the time the pilots know what they're doing.
Okay.
But they appreciate, especially at night, because by the time they showed up, it was dark. They appreciate
land in the dark.
They appreciate having lights and markers and all that stuff because they can't see everything.
Yeah.
So I even had radio communication with the helicopter because I had an ambulance actually calling me at the same time. Mm-hmm. I was like, hey, what's the radio frequency? So that was able to dial them in and say, hey, this is a completely open sagebrush, nothing to worry about.
So what did you use?
I used my Baofeng actually.
Okay.
Yeah. And just punched in the court and the frequency, which he was like, he's like, no one's ever done that before.
He's like, I'm used to saving.
And he's like, he's been flying. This dude was like, I don't know, like 100 years old flying this helicopter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's probably like an ex-Vietnam pilot, right?
Dang.
And he's just like, that was, I've never had anybody hit me on the radio. When you started talking to us, we were just kind of like, who is this?
Yeah.
Like, I'm the guy on the ground with the light. But again, that just comes from experience, from stuff that I've done in the past. And so anyway, he gets loaded up. Dude, it was the best flight crew too.
Really?
These two guys jump out. Both of them's name was Josh, the Joshes. And dude, they're cracking jokes the whole time.
Yeah, of course. And I hope people realize that for any of you who have been involved in like any kind of emergency services or like my wife's in, you know, spent 10 years in the ER. I mean, you're talking about, I used to be a cop. You know, I spent 15 years in behavioral health where you just see the craziest stuff. Those guys have seen hell and back. You have this sense of humor that could only be understood by other people.
It wasn't even like it was dark humor. They were there from the very beginning to make him feel comfortable.
Oh, gotcha.
But it was also like once they kind of got to feel him out to see like, okay, he can take jokes.
Yeah.
They were like, dude, what's the matter? You can't ride? And like, just like giving him, flicking him stuff, you know, like, so it was fun. And then they asked, you know, where to take him, Flagstaff or St. George. Like, well, we already have a rig in St. George, take Let's him to back. St. George and I'll meet him there. So, I unfortunately had to end the trip about six hours in and, the other three guys that were with us kept going.
Well, you called me, remember? You called me, like, how far are you from this? Like, I'm like, 5 hours, 4 hours.
And that's one of the reasons why I called you, because once he gets airlifted, what are we doing with the bike?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's another story. We luckily, even though we were about 10 miles from pavement, we were able to find after calling all these different tow truck companies, this guy was like, I know about where you are. It's not that bad. I can make it back there.
Yeah.
And most companies aren't going to do that.
Nope.
So what we would have had to have done is go back to St. George, get the pickup, then go back, which is, it was 3 hours. And then at that point, hopefully the bike is even still there.
Yeah.
You know? So, long story short, we were actually thinking and hoping it was going to get totaled. We're still not sure at this point.
Oh, really? They haven't decided yet?
No, it's at a shop in Flagstaff right now. So still.
Oh, dude, that's weird.
Yeah. So the insurance hasn't come up with anything yet.
Interesting. So our guy.
Yeah, so
it's airbagged out.
We get to St. George, basically a compound fracture. Like it was so close to the skin that if you would have scratched your nail, it would have broke the skin.
Really?
They called it a fracture blister.
Yeah.
So it actually created a blister where there was so much fluid. Yeah, it could have. Anyway. So he does that tib fib and 8 bones in his foot. And surgeon does surgery, they do their thing, put them in an external fixator, which is basically a halo kit or cage for your leg.
Yeah. That's been shattered.
Yeah. So brutal. And, and which is crazy too. I never knew that if you get one of these, you know, they don't sew you up around those bolts that are going through your, it's open. Yeah. So it's constantly oozing, you know, not like bleeding, right? But just like fluid.
Yeah.
And doctor tells him, oh yeah, you'll be fine. We got get it all taken care of. Well, he gets back to his home surgeon and they're like, no.
They found more.
So here we, I think he's had two surgeries since then and it's going to be a long road. So the whole point of the story is one, know your medical plan, your evac
plan. Have a plan.
Have a plan. Mm. And at least know how to access those types of things. Yeah. And then two, really think about the circumstance that you're putting yourself in.
Yes.
When you want to just go have
be
fun.
Smart. Yep.
Yeah. Just be smart about what you're doing.
Yep. There's something that, our pastor used to say, and I don't know why it just totally triggered. He still says this, if you're going to do wrong, right?
Well, I will say he did wrong, right? Right. Yeah.
Garmin in reach, man.
For sure. And you know what? And I've carried one for years.
Yeah.
Never had, luckily had to have to use the SOS button. The most important feature for me, other than the SOS, is being able to contact my family.
Yeah,
my
family
be able to contact me if something happens. You know, I've got a wife and three kids at home when I'm gone. And if there's an emergency at home, I need to
100%,
know.
100%, bro. I had somebody who was making fun of, you know, BDRs as like, it's what old white guys do, you know, when they're retired. And I'm like, stop.
It's far from that.
Yeah, it's far from that. And it's funny too, because so I have my little like wish list of stuff I need to get me. And you're talking about, I don't have these mics, the duals. Oh,
yeah.
But the same price as the Garmin InReach 2.
Yeah.
And then after we kind of went through this, I kind of went through it with you, but we're doing this. I'm like, oh, I'm getting the InReach before I get the stupid mics.
I would have thought you had one already, man. There's the Garmin InReach Mini. There's the InReach, which is kind of the full size GPS version. And then there's the Garmin 66i, which is
If that's the bigger one, isn't it?
It's a little bit bigger. It's like it's about the size of a. Oh, and there's also the Montana now that has InReach capability. So they're really incorporating it into a lot of their GPSs.
Well, and they communicate right, like to the other Garmin products.
Yes, yeah. So you can send, like, if you have one and you're in Baja, Mexico, and I'm in Idaho, and I know you're there, I can send you messages, or you know, vice versa. If we're both in the same place, but still we need to link up like we were trying to do before, I can give you coordinates and all that and chat that way. So they're pretty nifty little devices. The mini for me is the way to go because one, it's so small, and then two, you can link your phone to it to where if you're going to text message, you can text message as if you're just using iMessage through iPhone. So it's a pretty cool platform.
Yeah, definitely a must have.
Yeah.
Where there's no way for emergency services to get to you.
Yeah. And there's other brands out there too. There's Spot and Zero, I think, is the other one.
It's an Android one, isn't there? I may be wrong.
Well, I mean, you can use the Android on the InReach, but but there's other brands out there of a similar thing.
Yeah.
But in my experience with the one I have versus seeing what other people have had, plus the ones I've had Spots and other things in the past.
Yeah.
Hands down, the InReach is just the way to go. Yeah.
From a medical standpoint, how did you guys work him up? Like, what was the first thing that you were?
So, you know, after assessing and making sure that he didn't have any like external.
Was he just like sitting there when you came over? He standing on one foot?
Yeah, he was just sitting up. So he didn't have any like bad injuries, right? He wasn't bleeding out.
Yes.
You know, he could breathe, all
and
the things. Right.
Yeah.
So basically, you just kind of got him comfortable and knew that, okay, right now he's not feeling anything.
But he's
going to soon as the adrenaline and stuff wears off. And I knew right out of the gate, okay, we're probably an hour out before we actually get somebody here.
Yeah.
And get some real meds in him.
Yeah.
So first thing I did was he popped like 1,000 milligrams ibuprofen.
Okay.
Which
he had on him.
I'm not a doctor, you know, but I had it on me. And it's
you had it on you.
It's the only thing. I had some other stuff too, but we weren't going to go there because I just didn't want to feed him full knowing that they're going to give him something to begin with.
Okay.
So I gave him ibuprofen knowing that would at least help to slow down the swelling because it's going to swell right out of the gate. And then just kind of had him drinking some fluids right out of the gate to kind of help with any kind of.
So he's lucid. He's not.
That he wasn't going.
His eyes aren't going, you know, different direction. Oh, yeah.
No, dude, he hit so hard though that his visor came off of his helmet and the, what's it called? The lining of the side of the visor, what's that thing called? The
Like, it's like a anti-yes.
Sheeting?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an impact.
And I saw some pictures. It looks like his handlebars were broken.
He hit so hard that he snapped a handlebar, which.
Dang, dude.
Dude, that's a hard hit. Puncture the fuel tank, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So he was very, very lucky to come out the way that he did.
And the stuff that he had.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to look into that. You said it was an Alpine Star, like airbag, right?
Air vest. Yeah. So what's cool about those is they're a little expensive, but they're pretty neat. You can link an app to your phone to where it'll give you your day's ride worth of like technicality, like,
oh really,
lean angle, speed, all this other stuff.
Okay.
But then in a crash, it'll tell you like the G forces and all. Ooh. And all of that stuff.
Ooh.
So you know, and also it isn't really sensitive. So if you have just an easy off, it's not gonna go off.
No, right? Yeah. Though that's like airbags.
It has to be a significant off, right? For it to work. And it's reusable. So once it does deploy, you can send it back into them, and for a small fee, they'll recharge it and send it back to you.
No, that's a common misconception too with airbags. And like, I've even been working on vehicles with dudes and like, I don't want the airbag to open up if I hit it too hard. No, there's like three core pieces that have to interact. And
I know. Sensors and computers.
Well, dude, I'm glad he's okay.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who's ever had to use their InReach. So it's very interesting the way that scenario played out, being their location.
Yeah.
How it was a res and it was just nothing.
Well, and you know, the first thing they asked too was, you know, like based on your GPS, they knew where he was, but they basically were asking, are you in a canyon? Are you, because they couldn't see the exact topographical and all that kind of stuff. But it was great. I mean, in the event that we would have been in a canyon or, you know, a riverbed or anything like that, it would have been definitely more difficult to get a helicopter in there. But, I mean, the next thing for them was, if we can't get a helicopter in there, then we'll send people on foot to carry him out. I mean, they have a search and rescue team that would be next. And
dang.
Obviously that takes more time, but you know, they're going to get you out of there.
Yeah. Cool. So as we begin to build out the content, obviously we're going to draw heavily from personal stories and injuries and mistakes we've made, but also, my plan is for us to do some pretty cool content trips.
Yeah. Yeah.
In order to not only test the things that we're working on in our pace planning, you know, our medical stuff, you know, sustainment things, but to also learn more, push ourselves, just get out and camp, man.
Yeah. And share our experience
and share the experience. Because, yep.
I mean, I've done, I don't even know how many hundreds of days of camping off of a motorcycle.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've learned a little bit along the way that if you've never done it before, and I can save you to have to go through this trial and error.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad to help you do that.
100%. Awesome. Well, we're out of time. We're right at about 60 minutes. So we're good. This is still on too.
Yeah.
So we're going to cut it there. Guys, this is my friend, Kyle Cooper, now working with us at Bushcraft Survival. Follow him if you haven't already. Check out his sources. I'm telling you, he's got a rad YouTube channel where you can see all of his adventures there.
Yeah, YouTube is Backcountry ADV Moto. You can just type that in, or also on Instagram, Backcountry ADV Moto as well. So post a lot of content on both.
Awesome. Thank you, brother.
Yeah.
Catch you guys later.
See ya.